Welcome to Tarati Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Stacy Nechama Goldman, and today we will be studying Sefer Daniel Perek Vav. Once again, we have a perek that seems clear-cut in its chronology, but actually causes tremendous confusion. Our perek opens with Pasuk Aleph, and Daryavash the Mede received the kingdom at the age of 62. The order and duration of the Persian and Mede kings is the topic of many scholarly articles and beyond the scope of our study of Sefer Daniel. Suffice it to say, Daryavash the Mede, whose father is Achashverosh, is not the Persian Daryavash, also the son of Achashverosh, who oversaw the completion of the Second Temple. Our Daryavash in this perek precedes the second Daryavash by about 18 years, according to Chazal. Why does the text want us to know he began to rule at age 62? Rashi, based on Seder Olam, gives a fascinating explanation. And Daryavash the Mede received the kingdom at the age of 62. Why did he count his years? To tell you that on the day that Nebuchadnezzar entered the Heichal in the days of Jehoiachin, his adversary, Daryavash was born. Seder Olam, chapter 28. From the exile of Jechoniah until now were 62 years. And the master said they were exiled in the days of Jehoiachin, in the seventh year counting from the conquest of Jehoiakim, which is 8 years after the beginning of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. There remained to Nebuchadnezzar's reign 37 years, for he reigned 45 years, in 23 of Evil Marduk's, as our sages stated in Tractate Megillah, and the 2 years of Belshazzar that passed, totaling 62. The moment Nebuchadnezzar thought he could celebrate his defeat of the Judean kingdom, his ultimate adversary and destroyer of his kingdom, was born. The new Median king Daryavash set about appointing 120 satraps and three viziers to help keep order in the kingdom. One of the three viziers was none other than Daniel. He quickly impressed the king and rose above the rest due to his superior spirit, and the king sought to elevate him above the others. This caused a tremendous amount of jealousy to the extent that Pasuk Hei tells us, then the viziers and the satraps sought to find a pretext against Daniel regarding the kingdom, but they could find no pretext or fault because he was trustworthy and no error or fault was found about him. Unable to find anything that could sully Daniel's stellar character, they must resort to convincing the king to make up a law specifically targeted to getting Daniel in trouble. Pasuk Chet tells us, all the viziers of the kingdom, the prefects, the satraps, the leaders, and the governors have taken counsel to preserve the king's law and to strengthen a decree that whoever makes any request of any god or man until 30 days, except from you, O king, shall be cast into a pit of lions. This might be the first recorded legislated law against freedom of religion in the ancient world. Rav Maidan suggests that this anti-Semitism may have arisen as a result of the Jewish people maintaining their religiosity despite their conquest and exile. Every other conquering nation had succeeded in totally assimilating their new subjects to their own prevailing societal norms. The Jewish people were the first to resist assimilating and to even thrive in the foreign culture despite their differences. Mavim asks why they chose the specific area of prayer to target and why for 30 days. And why the king, who had shown no signs of megalomania or hatred toward those different from him, would agree to such a law. Didn't Daryavash himself pray to his god? The Mavim explains that the first 30 days of his reign were considered days of chesed, where the king would grant any and every request. People from all over the kingdom would come to him with their requests, even those usually reserved for their gods. To pray to a god and not the king during this time might imply that the king had limited power. The jealous viziers convince the king that this would be good for the kingdom and cement the king's power and ability to grant any and all requests, and he would win over the hearts of all the people. The viziers further request in Pasuk Tet that the king issue a decree and inscribe a writ that will not be amended, like the law of Media and Persia, which will not be repealed. This would ensure that the king must enforce this law and could not show mercy when someone had transgressed. We see this respect for the law also in the Purim story. Pasuk Yud Aleph tells us that Daniel, with full knowledge of this new legislation, proceeds to pray in front of his window in full view of all passers-by. And Daniel, when he knew that a writ had been inscribed, came to his house, where there were open windows in his upper chamber opposite Jerusalem, and 3 times a day he kneeled on his knees and prayed and offered thanks before his God, just as he had done prior to this. Before addressing the question of why Daniel risked his life in this way, we will go over the important halachot that the rabbis gleaned from this pasuk, which are all found in Masechet Brachot 31a. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba said, "One should always pray in a house with windows, as it is stated regarding Daniel, and when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went to his house. In his attic there were open windows facing Jerusalem, and 3 times a day he knelt upon his knees and prayed and gave thanks before his God, just as he had done before." Daniel Vav Yudalev. I might have thought that one could pray as many times as he wishes throughout the entire day. It has already been articulated by Daniel, with regard to whom it is stated, "And 3 times a day he knelt upon his knees and prayed." This teaches that there are fixed prayers. I might have thought that this practice of fixed prayer began only when he came to the Babylonian exile. It was stated, "Just as he had done before." Further, I might have thought that one may pray facing any direction he wishes. The verse states, "The appropriate direction for prayer is facing Jerusalem." So we learn from this Gemara to daven, ideally in a place with windows, 3 times a day, and facing Jerusalem. 3 times a day is especially interesting, as we traditionally understand our established prayer times as based on one of two ideas. One is that the tefillot replace the korbanot from the Beit HaMikdash. This concept might challenge the idea that these prayers were enacted before the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And yet, we understand that Daniel was engaged in this service while the Beit HaMikdash and its accompanying korbanot were still in place. The second understanding comes from the Avot, long before the existence of the Beit HaMikdash or even the Mishkan. The Gemara in Masechet Brachot points out the contradiction. It was stated, Rabbi Yossi, son of Rabbi Chanina, said, "The practice of praying 3 times daily is ancient, albeit not in its present form. Prayers were instituted by the patriarchs." However, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said that the prayers were instituted based on the daily offerings sacrificed in the Holy Temple, and the prayers parallel the offerings in terms of both time and characteristics. The Ritva explains that even though the forefathers established 3 different times of prayer, they were not obligatory until the rabbis fixed them according to the korbanot. This would put tefillah in the category of rabbinic obligation. Ramban, based on the prayers of the forefathers, holds that tefillah is a Torah-level obligation, but only in times of distress when we call out to Hashem. Rambam, based on a pasuk from Shema, "To serve God with all your heart," holds that tefillah once a day is required from the Torah, regardless of urgency. Given the lack of clarity on the level of obligation for prayer, it is surprising that Daniel would have felt the need to risk his life by engaging in prayer in such a public way as to bow in front of his open window. Rav Meidan sums up the different opinions of various Rishonim. He says, "Some of the Rishonim address the question of why Daniel endangered himself by praying, and suggests different explanations than that of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, who argues that prayer takes precedence over pikuach nefesh. Ramban and the Ran conclude, in Shabbat 39a, that at a time of decrees aimed against the Jewish faith, a person may act with a special measure of piety and give up his life, even when he is being prevented from carrying out a positive commandment such as prayer, as opposed to being forced to violate one of the cardinal negative commandments where giving up one's life is mandatory. And even when the commandment is of rabbinical origin, they discuss the possibility, even though they maintain, like the Rambam, in the Laws of the Foundation of the Torah 5:1, that a person may not be stricter with himself than the law demands by giving up his life in a situation where he is not required to be put to death rather than transgressing. The Ritva in Psachim 25b permits such self-sacrifice only when the generation is unmindful with respect to the commandment in question, and one's intention is to serve as a personal example of commitment to it, in keeping with the Numukhe Yosef of Sanhedrin 74a. However, in our case, we have no evidence that Daniel's generation was lax in matters of prayer, so it would seem that we must seek some other explanation. The Malbim offers a novel suggestion. He maintains that the king's decree outlawed new personal requests from any other deity. Daniel reasoned that his thrice daily prayer was simply repeating his usual requests as mandated by Jewish law. There were no new requests in his supplications, hence he was not transgressing the king's laws. He points out how the pasuk describing Daniel's action uses the Aramaic for the verbs prayed and thanked, umetzale umode, whereas the viziers in Pasuk Yud Bet accuse him of requesting and supplicating, Bae umitchanen. We see the king's fondness for Daniel when he hears the accusations against him and the requisite punishment of the lion's den in Pasuk Tetvav. Then, when the king heard the thing, he became very displeased, and he gave Daniel a reprieve to save him, and until sunset, he tried to save him. Rashi explains that the pasuk specifies until sunset is that is the time when Daniel began to pray yet again at the required time, which left the king no choice but to carry out the punishment, again, just like the Purim story. Ironically, the king himself seemed to call out in prayer to Daniel in Pasuk Yud Zayin when he raised his voice and said, May your God, whom you serve regularly, save you. After Daniel is sealed into the lion's den, the king continues to show concern. As in Pasuk Yud Tet, the king went to his palace and retired while fasting, and no table was brought before him, and his sleep wandered from him. The king rushes out of bed in the morning and, to his great relief, finds Daniel alive in the lion's den, unscathed. Seemingly going against his own law, he ordered Daniel lifted from the lion's den and ordered the slanderous men, along with their wives and children, to be cast into the den. Pasuk Chaf Hei tells us they did not reach the bottom of the pit before the lions overwhelmed them and crushed their bones into fine particles. The king praises Hashem and orders a new law in Psukim Kaf Zayin and Kaf Chet that in the entire dominion of my kingdom, everyone should quake and be awestricken before the God of Daniel, for he is a living God. He exists forever, and his kingdom will not be destroyed, nor will his dominion until the end. He saves and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who saved Daniel from the hands of the lions. We end our parak with Pasuk Chaf Tet, which states, And this Daniel prospered in the time of the kingdom of Dariavish and in the kingdom of Koresh the Persian. Rashi explains that Koresh was Dariavish's son-in-law, who took over after Dariavish's very short one-year reign when he was slain in battle. Malbim quotes Abarbanel, who says that after the lion's den, Daniel requested an exemption from further royal service and headed to Shushan, where according to the opinion cited in chapter 1, he became Chatach and served Esther. Zerubbabel replaced him in the king's palace and remained there until he went to Israel to begin the construction of the second Beit HaMikdash. One last note on this parak, if you read through the Aramaic in Sefer Daniel, several words and phrases may sound familiar from the Shabbat Zemer Karibon. Most famously, when he describes, Prokyat anach mipum aryavata, redeem your sheep from the mouths of lions. Like Yosef before him, Daniel elevates Hashem's name in exile through his descent into a dangerous place. This would have been, and continues to be, a very comforting notion for the Jewish diaspora that Hashem and his miracles are with the Jewish people no matter where we are. Thank you for studying together Lilui Nishmat, Rose Foreman, Rachel Rachel bat Aryeh Leib, and Rachel Zeitlin, Rachel bat Shlomo.